You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Welcome to Two Peas on a Podcast. These current events and hot topics aren't going to talk about themselves. And now, here are the two Peas, Andy and Gerald.
Don't wish it away, don't look at it like it's forever. Ooh,
ooh. Here we are.
Between me and you. Oh, man.
Love him, man. Love him.
You're starting out kind of bluesy, bro. Are you sad?
Love him. Well, I'm a little sad because our boy announced retirement. Elton John.
After 300 shows.
I know, that's true.
That's crazy.
Welcome in, Two Peas on a Podcast, episode 59.
59.
We're almost 60, brother.
Almost.
Almost over the hill.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's the show. I'm over the hill.
I think you're on the other side of the hill.
I'm
looking
over,
back at the hill.
I'm
you're
over,
in the valley.
I'm over 10 hills, brother. I'm done. I'm borderline death. Yes. I got one foot on a banana peel, as they say. Have you ever heard that saying?
No.
One foot in a grave, one foot on a banana peel.
Ah, okay.
You haven't heard that?
No, I haven't. Well, that's good. I don't hang out with a lot of old people.
You don't hang out with people on the verge of death?
Yeah, you're the only one.
Just me once a week.
You gotta keep me up to date with all the,
the
death talk.
Welcome in to episode 59 of Two Peas. Gerald is here.
Andy is with Gerald.
And who is giving us our sweet tunes on the beginning here is Mr. Sir Elton John.
Man.
And we're going to get into that in a moment. But first, I want to find out how your week was. Let me fade.
That's why they call it the blues.
It's laughing like children, brother.
Living like children.
Wait a minute, what?
Is it the other way
you
around?
Flipped it, brother. It's laughing like children, living like lovers.
I do know it's rolling like thunder under the covers.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, how was your week?
Is that how
your
wife would describe you? Like, well, tell me about Gerald, like your love life. Well, it's kind of like thunder under the covers. Are you like thunder?
I don't think she would say that, brother. She would probably say
it's like
a disaster.
It's not quite thunder. It's more like a light drizzle.
More like a disaster, Hurricane Floyd situation.
My week was good.
Was
you
it?
Were asking.
Okay, so we can move on then. I just wanted to double
check. My week was really good.
You were telling me about the.
I did tell everyone.
So let's keep it brief, but tell everyone you did like a. Because you do, what would you call them? Sermons? I don't know what you call them.
Like sermons or talks or
lectures
about
spirituality and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And you, by the way, I got to come see you do one. You always do them when I'm working, bro.
Interesting how that works, folks.
It's weird how I pick up a shift
how
when
that,
you're doing
it. Exactly. Like, hey, Gerald, I'm doing one this afternoon. Oh, yeah, I think I'm going to probably have to.
Let me. Before I commit, let me call work and see if they need me. I can't go. But so it was weird because you said you had another one of those, which you do frequently.
Yeah.
But this one was like at a coffee shop.
At a coffee shop called Oasis and Carbro.
So what was it like? I mean, that's kind of weird, right?
Groovy little place, but I mean, it was about 7 o'clock at night. Not a lot of people there. Low light. Everyone's sipping tea and sitting on couches. And I'm talking about winter and death. And so it was I felt like I had to snap my fingers a lot.
Dude, right up my alley. I should have been there for that one.
But no, it was a groovy experience. I think we had a good time. Had a great discussion.
Okay.
Oasis is a coffee shop in Carbro. Check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Near Chapel Hill,
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's like a very cool kind of spiritual vibe. So it was a lot of fun. I had a good time, man.
Cool.
Had a good time. How was your week? How are you doing?
I was good, man. A lot of work as usual. What did I do? I didn't do
what
anything.
What did you do?
Nothing. I haven't done shit. All right, so.
We shouldn't start with this as a
I gotta start coming up.
Because this is a very depressing part of the podcast.
It really is, right? I gotta start coming up with some things.
Yeah.
But, you know,
how about do something?
Yeah, I should do something. Yeah.
Go on a walk.
Well, this is my first day off in a while today. I'm doing a recording for you with you, and then
doing another one after this.
I'm doing another recording after this with some podcasting friends of ours. We're going to do the top 5 80s original movie songs, songs from movies,
but original,
and, original, like written for the movie.
Ghostbusters.
That's a good one. We got some Twitter love with that one, but. Since you asked, I'll just mention our Patreon because we're doing. So what I'm going to do is once a month I'm going to do a bonus episode, and what I decided is for the first 6 months of this year I'm going to do a 80s themed bonus episode.
All 80s.
Yeah, in January we had the top 5 1980s soundtracks that one's already been released.
Okay.
We've already recorded the top 5 1980s love ballads.
Ooh.
Which will be out in February for Valentine's Day.
Okay. Sir Elton John probably has a couple.
Yeah, it's
good
true.
Love ballads.
Hey, he didn't make our cut, but you're right, he probably does.
Well, see the thing is he transcends the genre that is the 80s.
That's
so
true.
When you think about 80s love ballads, you don't really think about Elton.
I mean, Elton John's one let's get into him. You want to?
Yeah.
Let's talk about him now. Elton John announces his retirement. All right.
Wow.
He's retiring after 55 years, brother.
55 years?
He began his career in 1963.
Okay.
He went on an interview on Good Morning America. He wants his last performance and first performance of his farewell tour to be in the U.S. He says he owes America so much. He basically owes this country his career, and he loves this country. The reason he's retiring, he said his priorities are his husband and his children. He will remain creative, but will no longer tour. Now, with that being said, he's doing a 3-year farewell tour.
I'm leaving the business in 3 years.
In 3 years, I'm done. But hey, he announced it. So he's going to be touring for 3 years,
brother. So check it out, brother. Check it out.
That's a lot, right?
I didn't listen to a lot of Elton John when I was
younger.
Really?
Oh, I love him. My dad loved him.
I was in Chicago, and a friend of mine comes up to me and says, hey, there's a concert tonight. I'm really good friends with the head camera lady. Do you want to come with me? We'll be like on the front row right by the stage. And I was like, sure, let's go. Let's do this. Billy Joel and Elton John.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I go, and I'm leaning on the stage.
Were you a Billy Joel fan?
I like Billy Joel as well. Billy Joel was wonderful. They played back and forth. They each had their own set. They played for like 4 hours.
Yeah.
But when Elton John comes on, this man blew
crazy,
me
right?
away. Like, yeah. You can barely look at him. He's so bright.
Yeah.
He has to do a standing ovation, or he has to get up and bow to the audience after every song, because he gets a standing ovation after every song.
That's crazy, man.
Like a 5-minute ovation. This guy, when he plays the piano, lights stream from
him. Yeah. I mean, he's just
and that's when I became a super fan.
He's an iconic figure, and he's just so unique, brother. There's obviously replication since, but in the 60s and 70s, when he was at the peak, I mean, there was nobody like rocking out to piano.
And, the name of his writing partner, do you remember? I mean, he's got a famous writing partner.
Tim Rice, and Tim Rice was the Disney films, but I can't remember. I don't know.
So, because it's not just the way he plays and the way he sings and the way he performs, but the lyrical content of his, of his song.
Well, what I was going to say about Elton John is he's one of those few artists that... You know, we were talking about the top five 1980s songs, and I mean, he's one of those few artists that you could do a list of the 60s, 70s, 80s,
90s.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably got at
the song
least,
you played here, that's probably a 90s song.
I think that's an 80s tune, I think. I'd have to look, but I think that's an 80s tune. But I mean, he's just been around forever, man. It's 1963.
He still looks so good.
He does.
Like, man, still wearing them bright glasses.
He's gay. Did we talk about that? Did I tell you he's gay? Did you know he was gay?
Get out of town.
Came out.
Wait, no.
Came out. He's gay.
Why?
Did you
just break it to the world? He might not be ready for people to know
We're here
yet.
To just blow people's minds, brother. I'm sure everyone
but
knows.
But I mean, it's a beautiful man, beautiful
he's
artist.
The man.
And also, you know what? I love it that in 3 years, he is going to take a step back. Because we're touring constantly. His family, he deserves that time to reflect and to just be happy. And, it's great.
Well, I love Elton John.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite Elton John song?
Oh, the one you just played. I love that one.
Yeah.
Your Song
That's
was
good.
A song my wife and I danced to at our wedding. Oh, I love that one.
My favorite one is Tiny Dancer.
Tiny Dancer's a great song. Levon?
Levon.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, I guess that's why they call it the blues, which I open with.
Sacrifice?
Sacrifice. Sad song say so much.
Oh, that's a great one. Don't go breaking my heart.
That's good.
Crocodile. Let's go to the old ones.
Crocodile Rock. He's just a great artist,
man. The Bitch is Back.
Yeah, I almost played that today. I didn't want you to get offended, though. You're like, he's calling me a bitch again.
I was like, wow.
I didn't want you to get offended.
Come back after 1 week.
But anyway, Elton John, retiring.
You look good in some of those glasses. Some of those glasses with the bright sparkles.
I'll take it. I'll get some of those suits, some of those glasses. But Elton John announces his retirement, so get ready. It's going to be 3 years in the making. But he will...
Probably hard to get tickets to those 300 shows.
He will be... I guess he'll actually be retiring right around the same time. Hopefully Trump's out of there, so that might be a good celebration there. It starts the tour, the 3-year farewell tour. They have not announced all the dates yet, but it will be starting in September of this year in Allentown, Pennsylvania. That's where he's going to begin the tour. And
Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Like I said, his intention is to end it also in the U.S., but it will be a global tour to thank all of his fans.
He said he got to start at the Troubadour. That was one of the big venues, I guess, that made him popular.
Yep. Cool. That's where it all started for him. So, all right, let's get into Groundhog Day. Today's Groundhog. Did you know that?
Hey, happy Groundhog.
Did you know Groundhog Day?
Punxsutawney Phil.
I know. How do you say it? I can't say
it. Punxsutawney Phil.
I'm glad you said that.
Punxsutawney is not.
Well, that was today. Did you know that?
Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Did you know that was today?
Yes, I did.
So, what is it? The fucking mole? What is the guy? Groundhog Day should have given
Groundhogs
it away.
Groundhogs do not. The groundhog. Call moles, brother. Don't call them moles.
The groundhog comes out of the ground. Yeah. He saw a shadow.
He did.
Yeah. That means six more weeks to winter. Is it cold right now?
It's 39.
Yeah, it's cold.
Yesterday it was 59.
So do you like that, or would you prefer not see a show?
I want more winter.
You do?
I want more winter.
I don't know.
It's February. We're only halfway done. Come on, more winter.
I don't like being sweaty, you know what I mean? Which for me is pretty easy, but I prefer right in the middle, right in that sweet spot, like 60s.
Like yesterday.
Yeah, 60s, low 70s, yesterday.
But spring. And where we live, for some reason, we tend to get some of our coldest, darkest weather in February. Like that's we always get snow in February
Well, anyway, just to let everyone know, he saw his shadow this morning, actually, February 2nd, as we're recording. So
he's 100 years old.
We
you know
are
Punxsutawney Phil.
Who is
Punxsutawney Phil?
That's the same groundhog.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was born about the same time you were.
Yeah, roughly a couple weeks later.
Yeah. But yeah, he's been doing this for 100 years.
6 more weeks of winter. There you go. Okay. Saw a shadow.
Do you think the newscasters are changing their forecast? Awesome.
I want to ask you about this.
Okay.
Actually, the groundhog would probably be better than some of the local meteorologists.
Exactly.
He's a fucking animal.
We can't do the weather yet. Punxsutawney Phil.
We need to talk to our buddies over at Varmints. I wonder if they're doing a groundhog episode.
They should.
I wonder why they haven't done
that. I'd love to know the history
done that this
of
week.
Like, where did Groundhog Day come from?
Now, forgive
why,
me if they have. They've why, done like 100 episodes, so it's possible they've done it. But
Ask them.
I'm going to ask Paul and Don if they've done it.
What is with the groundhog? Where does that come from?
That's a good idea.
Groundhog Day, great movie, by the way, Bill Murray.
It is a great movie, great flick.
Spiritually, it's a movie about purgatory.
Okay, I want to see your reaction to this one. Okay. I don't know if you saw. Did you ever see, back in 2004, a film called Passion of the Christ?
Yes, I did.
Mel Gibson film.
I did. Man, that's a bloody film.
Starring Jim Caviezel.
Pretty good movie.
It won tons of awards. It was critically acclaimed. Just a great movie regardless of your religious background. Just like you said, it was pretty in your face. But
oh, absolutely.
It was supposed to be a true depiction of the story of the Bible leading up to Christ's crucifixion.
Yeah.
Right? Am I getting that right?
A true depiction so far, from a certain perspective, absolutely.
So far am I... Okay. And it had... what's the guy that betrayed him? Fucking...
Oh,
what's the guy that betrayed Jesus?
Yeah,
Judas is in it. You know,
yeah,
Judas character. Mary Magdalene's in it, right?
Yeah, but the way they do the Judas character, they have like... he's being taunted by evil spirits afterwards. So they don't just do it very, very graphically. They put a deep kind of dark spiritual element in it. They make it almost mythic in the way they tell it.
Okay.
But, I mean, I thought it was an interesting movie.
Okay. So here's the thing.
Tell me
there's a sequel coming.
No, there's not.
Passion of the Christ. And Jim Caviezel, who played Jesus in the original, is in the works to reprise his role, no pun intended, resurrect his role.
Nice. Well done.
You see what I did there? Yeah. And it's going to focus on the resurrection and the events thereafter.
Yeah, because I don't remember where Passion ended.
It ended with him with the tomb opening or whatever.
Okay.
And then it just
so
ended.
Like this, so now we're going to talk about the resurrection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, supposedly. Yeah. Mel Gibson's moving forward with the sequel to The Passion of the Christ, and Jim Caviezel told USA Today recently that he is not only going to star in the film, but that he feels like the film is going to shock audiences and could possibly be the biggest film in history. Listen to his quote here. Here's his quote. Quote, there are things that I cannot say that will shock the audience. It's great. Stay tuned. I won't tell you how he's going to go about it, but I will tell you this much. The film he's going to do is going to be the biggest film in history. It is that good. Unquote. Do you think that's setting up a little?
I think it's,
that's getting the expectations a little higher, right?
You think even Mel is like, dude?
Mel's probably like, whoa, brother. Like, we need to pump the brakes here.
Okay.
I haven't even read the script yet. Like, calm down.
Yeah.
But anyway, there you go.
Yeah.
So, what did you like the first one?
I thought it was pretty good.
I mean, as a religious guy, did you think it was blasphemy or did you think, oh, it's pretty good?
Well, I don't honestly believe in blasphemy. I mean,
what?
Here's the thing.
This is turning into a new thing now.
Well, blasphemy is speaking against the truth.
You didn't tell this to
the
people at the coffee shop last night, did you?
Truth is subjective. It's our subjective understanding of it. So, Passion of the Christ is a perspective on that story. It is not the story because the story exists kind of in our minds and our hearts and our hopes and our fears.
Okay.
That's the story. So, it gives you a very, very graphic depiction of it. It is very, very Christian-centered, and I think there was a lot of a Jewish kind of pushback because the Jews were depicted as like almost licking their lips as he was getting tortured.
Right, right.
But it is a perspective, and it gives you a glimpse into the pain that Jesus of Nazareth went through and what that could mean. So, I mean, it's a good film.
All right, let's talk about the Grammys.
Yes.
You see the – you didn't watch any of the awards program. Did you do that? We talked about you don't watch the Oscars.
My Artist of the Year did pretty good, though.
Bruno Mars, yeah.
My Artist
won,
of the
right?
Year.
He wrapped up.
And I won this at 24 Karat was one of my albums. So I'm just saying.
That's accurate.
I'm just saying.
That's accurate. It was
my
your,
Artist of the
well,
Year.
Well, he was your Entertainer of the Year, and 24K was your honorable mention.
Yes,
so
exactly.
You're all over.
I'm just saying.
He beat mine, so you were. I guess you beat me.
Bruno's awesome.
As usual.
Bruno is.
Thanks.
I think he is one of those timeless artists, or he will be.
Yeah.
Because he seems...
No, he's a man.
He seems to touch into...
He's got a little Michael Jackson-ish kind of feel, right? It's just kind of...
But you, when you listen to him,
like, really get
like,
old.
When I first heard Town Funk...
Town Funk,
when
yeah.
I first heard it, I was like, is this a 70s song?
I know.
Like, oh, that's Bruno.
And you felt that way about Locked Out of Heaven, too.
Yeah.
Which was before that, even.
Yeah.
Sounded kind of like an old 80s kind of funk
tune.
Yeah,
so I like him.
So listen, man. So here are some of the winners from the Grammys. All right. And I want to talk a little bit about a little controversy.
Yes. We need to talk about
of
the controversy.
Of course, every event has controversy.
Yeah, exactly.
But I want to touch on it. Okay. So here we go. So we already talked about it, but Record of the Year was 24K Magic by Bruno Mars.
24K with Magic in the Air.
Album of the Year. was also Bruno's 24K.
24K with magic.
Song of the year was "That's What I Like" by Bruno.
That's what I like.
Best new artist.
Best
new artist was Alicia Cara.
Oh, I like her a lot. I like her. She's good. Really good. She's good. Very dark. Her music is very dark. I like it a lot.
So here's one. Actually, this isn't the one, but I'll tell you real quick. The best pop album went to Ed Sheeran for his Divide.
Ed Sheeran's very talented. Record. I mean, come on. This guy's wonderful.
I saw a meme that went viral. Somebody was in the grocery store, and they took a picture of sliced cheese, and on the packaging or whatever, it said, you know, Velveeta, whatever, whatever, 15 cheesy singles. And somebody was holding it, took a picture of it. They said, I got the new Ed Sheeran album.
15 cheesy singles.
Here's the one I want to ask you about.
You like Ed?
I like Ed, but here's what I want to ask
you. Tell me about the controversy, though.
Here's the controversy.
Okay, tell me about the controversy.
So let me tell you about this category, okay? So this is the category for best pop solo performance.
Pop solo performance.
Here you go. Now, I want to lay this out for you before you respond.
Lay the groundwork.
Here were the nominees.
Okay.
And tell me what comes in your mind when I tell you these five nominees.
Okay.
Kelly Clarkson.
Got it.
Kesha. Lady Gaga.
Gaga.
Pink,
of course.
And Ed Sheeran.
Well, all very talented, of course.
What's different there?
All have been around for a little while, except Ed's probably the newest one. But four girls, one guy.
Okay, four girls, that's one guy.
And I hated that we see it that way.
Ed Sheeran's the only guy. Yeah. The song that was nominated in that category is a song about the female body.
Yeah.
Shape of You.
Yeah, Shape of You. I'm in love with the shape
of
you.
Hey, great song. Big song of the year.
Dude, it's a wonderful song.
A lot of people's number one song of the year.
It's a wonderful song.
You can dance to it. You can vibe to it.
Yes, it's about it's a sexual song. It's about sex and bodies. My bed sheets smell like you.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, I don't know. Do you see where people are coming from with the controversy? Here's the thing for me is I feel like Kesha should have won. I mean, all the shit she went through with her trial and being like molested by her record producer
You think the backstory of her song should go into being the choice for the song?
In this case, yeah. I mean, did you see her performance of it where she was like crying on stage? Yeah. I mean, she was like emotional, bro.
It's a beautiful song.
And Praying is a song, and I'm sure you know it. They played it on the radio.
And the other songs were like dark as well, I feel like.
Yeah, Million Reasons was a slow one.
Yeah.
What About Us by Pink? I'm not placing right now.
That's a good song.
Love So Soft by Kelly Clarkson. Yeah. And then, like we said, Shape of You. But anyway, Shape of You won, and I don't know. I just...
Well, it is the most poppy song out of the group.
It is.
It is probably the most popular song out of the group.
And I don't really, I guess it would depend on if they gave a caveat of what their criteria was, I guess.
But exactly. And I looked into that as well. I looked, okay, who chooses this?
I don't know. I just
it was the song that got played the most. It is the most commercially, quote, pop song.
I feel like it does kind of illustrate how different, like, groups of folks that are running these shows.
Exactly.
How it can show how they're a little tone deaf.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you would look at that and you would go, oh, okay, anybody but Ed Sheeran. Yeah. basically give it to anybody.
Yeah.
Because of the current climate.
Yeah.
But to your point, if we're just basing it on the five songs, then maybe Shape of You was the best pop song.
Yeah. What's the best?
I don't know.
We can talk about what the pop genre is anyway.
Kesha was my winner. I'm just telling you.
It was the song I heard the most on the radio. It was the song that has the catchiest jingle to it. As far as commercial pop songs. Now, here's the thing about that kind of makes me a bit uncomfortable about what I call misplaced aggression.
Mm-hmm.
I think the anger behind, like what I've heard from people talking, like, I mean, this... The one guy in a group of with four girls wins a song that's talking about a woman's body.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, really?
That's what I'm saying, tone deaf.
But I can understand where the aggression comes from. I can understand where the fear and the anger. It's a very, very real kind of anger that's coming out of the community right now about what's happening in our current climate. However, I find that in these situations, sometimes that anger and that fear is misplaced, meaning that, I mean, this is just... A Grammy for a pop song.
Do you think...
So I don't think it's as big a deal as we're making it out to be.
Let me ask you.
I can see where the anger comes from.
Let me ask
because
you.
Because how many songs in the pop world are about sex?
Mm-hmm.
They're like...
Oh, of course.
90% of them about sex.
Let me ask you...
I don't know.
Let me ask you, based on the Me Too movement, if you think if that movement didn't exist, would this be an issue?
Well, I think the movement was bound to happen eventually anyway because of our current climate. Now, we might not have been conscious of it, but it does bring up the question, like you said, okay, there's five songs. Why does this song... The bigger question is, why does this song win?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do we like songs about sex? Why do we like songs that have simple jingles to them? Like, you're not going to learn a lot from Shape of You. It's not a song that teaches you anything. It's not a song that dives deep into anything. It's just a commercial pop song.
And here's another...
The bigger question is, I think the question we should ask is, why do we like this song so much?
And here's another interesting tidbit. The only... In the major categories, there was only one female winner.
Yeah.
And we're talking 15
and that
categories.
Show, that show pretty large bias. So I don't want to.
So I guess I what I'm saying. I guess what I'm saying movement, is. But I understand what you're saying. But I guess what I'm saying is that because, and we've talked about this before, not obviously about Grammy Awards, but just period. But because of Me Too and Time's Up and all that, you know, the women's empowerment movement that's occurring right now, the culture is shifting. So what I'm saying is people that run the fucking Grammys need to stop a second and go, okay.
Yeah, I think you got a point.
Like, you know, 2, 3, 5 years ago, nobody's going to look at this. But right now, we should be honoring women in our society. Yeah. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
So, and not only that, I feel like Kesha, I mean, now, is there a little bit of extracurricular into my mindset there because of what she went through outside of music? Yes. But I feel like she overcame so much.
Yeah.
She came back this year. I mean, this was her comeback. She, you know, she wasn't able to make music for like 3 years because of the lawsuit. Like, they wouldn't let her record anything.
Mm-hmm.
So she overcame that. You know, she made it through that and she's now putting music out again. And not only that, she's singing lyrics that speak to those 3 years where she was off and what she was going through.
There's definitely a lot more substance to that song.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, that's what I'm saying. So she's my winner, bro. And I, you know, I don't know. It's just, I like Ed Sheeran. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a great song.
Yeah.
And I like that. I got that album. I mean, I purchased it. I think it's a great album. Yeah. But I just feel like we have to, or
that's a good point.
I feel like we should start incorporating some of these other kind of abstract reasons into what we pick. Because that's part of the culture shift.
And I think it's interesting where our aggression comes out. It comes out at the Grammys. It comes out the big pushback that Janet wasn't picked for the Super Bowl, you know, with Justin Timberlake thing.
Right,
interesting where our aggression comes out. So, like I said, I think you're kind of pointing it out. The bigger question is, why was this song picked? Why do we like this song?
Right.
Why is that the most commercial pop song? What is popular music? And maybe we should step back and begin to reflect more, especially. I think you've made some great points.
So look, let's see a couple other big ones. Best rock song went to the Foo Fighters for Run. Best rock album went to, I don't know, The War on Drugs, but it's a group called The War on Drugs, and their album is A Deeper Understanding. Let's see, Leonard Cohen won for Best Rock Performance for You Want It Darker. Let's see, the National won Best Alternative, The Weeknd, Starboy won Best Urban Contemporary. Another one for Bruno Mars for R&B album.
It is interesting that there
Bruno racked up.
Bro. Are there always this many, this kind of unbalance between male winners and female winners? I guess maybe all this
saying, bro.
Maybe all this is teaching me something because I don't see a lot of female winners.
I'd have to go back and look, man.
Is it the saturation of males in the pop industry? Is it?
I mean, just, I don't know, man. That's a lot.
I hear female artists on the radio all the time.
Me too. I'm a huge fan of tons of female artists, so I don't know.
Wow. Maybe I got some stuff to think about.
I mean, my girl Tay Tay got snubbed. She didn't win for her reputation. And the last one I'll mention, just because I finally get some vindication from my Golden Pea. Damn by Kendrick Lamar was the rap album of the year, and Humble was the rap song of the year, both from Kendrick Lamar there. So that's some Grammy highlights there. I just want to talk to you a little bit about the I feel like the controversy is going to happen no matter what.
It's going
to
come out. Like I said, it's going to come out in these kind of situations.
That's why I'm saying with the panel of people that sit down to figure this out, is a bunch of people. You got 4 women there, one of which who was literally overcoming an harassment suit by a male that was in power above her producer. You see what I'm saying? Like, she's literally a poster child for the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
I don't know. You just had an opportunity there, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you think...
In other words, I don't think Ed Sheeran or any of his fans or anybody's going to be like, oh, I can't fucking believe Kesha won it.
Yeah.
That's true. Do you know what I mean?
It's interesting to think that, does that go into their mindset? Are they just picking up on, okay, how much was the song played? What are the record sales?
Yeah, that's the thing, too. You know,
like, how much people like it? How much have I heard it? Is it just going on that? Or do you think that... Because you know when you see, like, what's the big award show for movies? Oscars,
yeah.
Is that the foreign press?
Yep.
Like, for some reason, they always pick not the most commercially successful movies.
Right.
They pick the deepest movies.
Right.
They pick the movies with the most profound message.
Exactly.
Seems like in the Grammys, they don't really do that.
Yeah, I mean, the Oscars don't even recognize movies that are blockbusters.
Exactly.
I mean, rarely.
So, interestingly enough, here in the Grammys...
but I mean, that was the last time.
Shape of You was obviously the most, quote, popular song.
Right.
So I can see why they chose it, but maybe, I don't know, maybe you're right. Maybe they do need to start thinking, okay, let's look at context here. Let's look at a song that actually changed, you know, the environment. Let's look at Sean. Man, Gerald, you're brilliant. I think you're right.
I'm here, man. I'm such a deep guy, brother. Such a deep guy. All right, last one on our entertainment side here, brother. We love Mr. Tom Hanks.
We do.
He's an American treasure, isn't he?
An American treasure.
He is a gem. Yes. I love Tom Hanks. Well, he is going to be starring as Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers.
In a biopic. And is there anyone better for that, really? I mean, there's no one better for that, right?
Mr. Rogers.
So Hanks has signed on to star as Mr. Rogers in a film entitled You Are My Friend, which is going to be a drama about the children television pioneer.
It's weird because he had this, I mean, it's almost like Jim Henson. He had this very, very simple show,
yeah.
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and very, very simple themes like friendship and being a good neighbor and just positivity. However, you take this simple icon, he taught us so much and transcended the children genre.
You think this is going to be kind of, I bet there's some stuff behind the scenes that were a little dramatic though, I bet.
You think so?
What do you think? I mean, it's going to be a drama, apparently. It's not going to be a comedy.
Well, it's about someone
who was
hired to interview or to follow him.
Right. It says the movie is based on a relationship between Fred Rogers and journalist Tom Janude, who got to know Mr. Rogers and befriended him while writing for Esquire magazine in the 90s.
Won't you be
my neighbor? I don't know. I feel like you always wonder, you know, because it's such a lighthearted, happy
very positive
show, teaches children. Obviously, that's what it should be.
Yeah.
But it's almost like the set of Barney, though. You know, you watch Barney and you feel like when he takes the costume off, there's probably some crazy shit going on. You know what I mean? Like behind the scenes.
But you know what? You know what I mean? Don't you think for once we just want an iconic positive character to be an iconic positive character? And to actually be as good as he portrays himself to be. Don't you want that just for once?
You do.
I know you don't. You want the train wreck.
You do, but we all have shit going on. You know what I mean? All have stuff that we battle, brother.
Yeah.
That was too
deep. You think as soon as like the camera goes off, he lights a cigarette and gets the bourbon, like, oh, these fucking kids.
That was too deep, right? All right, let's take it. That was a lot, man. We got deep in the beginning there.
We did.
That's okay. It was important.
Yeah.
You look good today.
Thank you.
Did I tell you?
I'm wearing my two-piece t-shirt.
You got a two-piece shirt on. You got a little flannel action.
Flannel's back. That's my wife's.
Like, you're doing
my wife loves flannel.
Your wife told you flannel's back?
Loves flannel.
She lied to you, brother. Flannel is not back. But hey,
well, she's like an early 90s Pearl Jam grunge girl.
I know, yeah.
So, I mean, pair of jeans and a flannel shirt, she's good to go.
She's into it.
Oh, yeah.
So you're doing it for her.
I'm doing it.
I don't blame you. You probably need to get out of here, huh? She's waiting for you. Hands you a flannel shirt. Exactly. All right, man, let's take a quick break. We're going to do our first promo of the day today for the Epic Film Guys.
Okay.
Love those guys. They are going to be doing their second annual podcasting for the Cure for Cancer Research.
Oh, wonderful.
It's going to be in May, but they started signups for it. So I wanted to run a little promo for them and make sure you guys go check them out. The Epic Film Guys, we'll run that promo, Andy, and then we'll come back and get into our one deep topic, which is Mr. Trump's State of the Union.
The State of the Union.
Spoiler alert, it's not good. But we'll be right back, buddy. Okay. Hang tight.
The Epic Film Guys podcast is a film comedy podcast with two best friends celebrating everything we love about going to the movies. We've got great beer, amazing guests, and quirky characters unlike anything you've ever heard before.
Well, I just assumed you were drinking that chocolate stout that you were going to make with the cheapest crap chocolate ice cream in a Miller Lite. I remember being a young man and my mother telling me I didn't have a name because I was illegitimate. I don't know what that word means.
Subscribe to the Epic Film Guys on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, or your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you at the movies.
Andy giving sound effects for us.
Yeah.
On our lead in there. The Cure. I love The Cure, man.
Yeah.
80s, 90s rock, kind of modern rock.
Okay.
I like them a lot.
Here's the first deep question for you. Put you on the spot.
Wow.
Put you on the spot.
Get into it.
Our society has an ailment. What is The Cure?
Hugs.
There you go, brother.
Love.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool.
Just peace.
Mr. Rogers.
Peace and love, brother. I mean, is that a good answer? Or is that a perfect answer. The first thing that came to my mind was coffee. But then I feel like you just fucking wire everybody and they're just kicking everybody's ass. So don't do that. Our one deep topic. You ready, man? So this past, what was it, Tuesday night, I think?
Tuesday evening.
I believe it was this past Tuesday night. President Trump gave his first ever State of the Union address.
What is the state of our union?
In the Congress, I'm going to pull up an article that I have.
I think you and I, Gerald, need a State of the Union address. What is the state of our union?
Me and you? It's strong, brother. The state of our union is very strong.
Okay.
Where the hell is my article I was going to do here? Okay. Sorry, it's very unprofessional. Okay. Did you get a chance to watch any of it?
I didn't watch the whole thing.
No, of course not. How could you?
And it's an interesting tidbit about our bias. I heard heard someone when they were going over the polls and the numbers and the response, they reminded us as viewers, like, the people who watch the State of the Union are typically the fans of the president.
Yeah.
Like, I'm more apt to watch Obama's State of the Union because I like the guy.
That's
he makes me feel good.
That's
so
true.
It's interesting. It shows us, it shows me my own bias,
right,
because I'm so much less likely to watch what he and to listen with an open mind to what he has to say.
That's true.
Because I'm not a big fan.
That's true.
So, but I watched a lot of clips from
it. One thing I was hoping, though, I got to be honest, this might be kind of bad and kind of seedy.
Train wreck. You want the train wreck.
But I was kind of hoping somebody, like one of the Democrats, maybe even unannounced, like Nancy Pelosi you know, Chuck Schumer, somebody, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, would have invited Stormy Daniels. I would have loved to have her there front row, Cleveland, check it out, you know, and Trump trying to give a speech. Yeah. That'd be great, right?
Yes, just waving. Hey, hey honey.
That's just, that's that's the unsavory part of me.
You're so
We don't need that. We don't need that drama.
Let's not drop to that level.
Stormy. Let's see. Trump delivered his first State of the Union address on Tuesday night in a divisive speech dressed up with language of unity. The president highlighted a stock market that has, quote, smashed one record after another, unquote.
Bam.
The GOP's corporate giveaway, quote, the biggest tax cuts and reform in American history, unquote, and his still vague plan to rebuild the nation's infrastructure. You know, I watched about an 8-minute clip that had some of the takeaways from it. I mean, I just want to ask you, I mean, we talk about our bias.
Yeah.
So I feel like, well, both of us really, but I definitely know I'm biased.
Well, it's a bias constructed over our experience over the last year.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And part of that.
And even the campaign, even.
And of course, our entire life. But, you know, it's a, like, we don't watch the State of the Union in isolation. We compare it to the man that we know through his tweets. And I feel like we know more about Trump than any other president in history because he tells us every day.
Right, right, right. You know? So there's been this recent thing where Trump has basically been claiming, because the job creation in the country right now is pretty high.
Absolutely. Our economy is doing very well.
Our economy is doing well. But he's like claiming ownership of that. And
that's not really how the economy works, though.
You know, and the thing is, I can't remember the, actually our friend Michael, who we used to work with, shared it on Facebook. I can't remember the senator that tweeted it, but one of the senators tweeted it and said, like everything else in Trump's life, he inherited that. And one thing you're not, sick burn, right?
Yeah.
And one thing you're not going to hear at the State of the Union is thanks Obama, you know?
Of course.
Because this all
because,
started.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not like Trump showed up and was like,
the economy was getting better and better and better. Unemployment was dropping and dropping and dropping. And yeah, he walked into that.
Right.
Because the economy, I mean, it shifts slowly over time. And of course, the government and the president's decisions have a drastic impact on that. But you don't really see, the ripple effect is wide. You don't really see the actual results of it. You'll see the results of Trump's presidency for years to come.
Right.
So, I mean, yes, then the economy right now is doing very well. And I mean, he can be proud of that. That's fine.
Another takeaway is when he took a moment to praise the ICE agents, which is the Immigration and Customs officials that, you know, are helping for deportation and whatnot and keeping immigrants out. So, with all the current talk that we talked about last week, with the Dreamers and just, I don't know, kind of the shit show, honestly, when it comes to not taking care of people that would fall in the Dreamers category, undocumented immigrants. We said ones that are contributing, not the unsavory ones.
Yeah.
Again, is this for his base? Because why would you take up a 2 or 3 minute chunk of your State of the Union to praise the people that are arresting these guys and throwing them out of the country? I've seen stories of, and I don't have any specifics in front of me, what state or whatever, but I've seen stories of fathers, you know, getting pulled away from their families and being deported to their original country that they haven't been in 40 years, you know, and their families left here to not know if they're going to be able to stay or if they're going to have to go back. Mm. And stories like that, and the ICE is responsible for that because that's their job. But why would you take an opportunity to call to pump those people up in the current climate? Like, you don't need to mention them, right? I mean, right? Or what am I?
Well, I think his speech writers,
it seems insensitive.
His speech writers have a very difficult task when they're preparing the speech because they have to speak to the base, not just his base, but the Republican base, and they have to hit on things that his base cares about. Like you'll notice that primarily they talked about money, economy, immigration, and the war on terror, you know, and the things we're afraid of, America first, America first, America first. So they have to write about that. And one of the things that his base, conservative Republican base, is afraid of is immigration. They're very afraid that these immigrants are coming over and that. And he even said that our immigration policies now, and I don't know if he mentioned chain migration specifically. I think he did.
Mm-hmm, he did.
Was directly caused the last attack in New York. He said that that's why. You know, it's this chain migration thing that's causing all these terrorist attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, he has...
He's instilling fear again.
He feels he has to mention those warriors or those soldiers on the front line. I don't want to take anything away from ICE. I'm sure they're doing the job that they were given to do. And they're probably... I mean, they're great... I'm telling Trump. They're great people back there.
Yeah. But great people.
Like, he has... Through this speech that was clothed in unity, he has to mention the things that his base wants to hear.
Yeah.
That the economy's doing well, that we're gonna build this wall and keep those dirty people out, and that you don't have to be afraid anymore because we're going to have bigger walls and more money, You know, he has to mention those
before
things.
Before we get into our opinion of our State of the Union, no pun intended, what what did you think of the none of the Democrats standing? That's normal, right?
That's every State of the Union.
Okay.
Now, but here's the thing.
But Republicans will take an opportunity to criticize them for not, quote, standing for the country, much like the national anthem thing.
Did Republicans stand when Obama walked in?
No, very rarely.
No, of course not. Of course not. The divisiveness is increasing every term. Of course it is.
Right.
But, you know, as a Democrat, especially...
Let me ask you this, because I know you. Let me ask you this. And this, I don't mean to throw you for a loop. If you need a second to think about it, I can edit out the silence. If you were a Democrat, and that was your president, and he mentioned, I don't know, let's say the successes of the economy, for example, are you standing up and applauding him, or are you sitting down and showing that you don't?
This goes into my whole opinion of the standing thing anyway. Like,
I know it's just
they don't stand because they agree with him. They don't stand because they're actually moved by what he says. They stand to show that they're standing.
Right.
They stand like, I don't know how many times they stood during a general State of the Union. They did it for Obama as well, and they did it for every president. They stand like twice a minute.
Right. So it gets to be okay.
Like they feel like they have to stand for certain things, but
it'd be different
if I'm not. I would like to think that if he said something that actually moved me, I would clap and stand for it.
Right.
But I'm not just going to stand up to show. That's why they stand and say. I was going to get to that. The reason Democrats aren't standing is because they can't, because people are watching and they want. That's their statement. That's their Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
I'm sitting down. I don't agree with this guy. He's saying one thing, but look what he tweeted yesterday. Look what he tweeted the day before.
Right.
I mean, he's begging for unity. We got to come together as a country. You're the most divisive president we've ever had.
Right.
Come together.
Right.
Like, it's a great idea coming together, but you got to help us come together.
I think it would be more impactful.
All you do is criticize.
I think it would be more impactful if, like what you said, if they just stood based on the merit of their actual reaction.
It's like, wow, like, yeah, that's good. Yeah,
because
okay.
like Paul Ryan and those guys, I mean, they stand up no matter what he said.
Yeah.
They might not even heard what he said. They're like, oh, I got to stand up.
Yeah.
You know, but like...
I've thought that, in other words,
if the chamber stood up two or three times over the course of 90 minutes instead of 50, then it'd be like, wow, those three things were really... Yeah. That really got to everyone.
Because they want their constituents to see they care about the economy. So if he says, you know, the economy's doing better than it ever has before, they have to stand for that.
Right.
Because they're showing their constituents, economy's important to us.
Well, I think it's messed up that... he didn't mention the Me Too movement or any of that stuff, but I also feel like had he would have just been berated for it because he's part of it.
Of course.
So exactly. It's almost good that he didn't, to be honest with you. But as the president of our country, that's such a huge thing since he took office.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little bit of a cop-out that he didn't mention anything they might be doing to try to better that.
That's kind of the Republican stance. It was a very Republican speech. That's kind of the conservative way. They stick to things that are very grounded, very conservative, like the economy, like immigration. What I love about when Obama speaks and why I tend to lean toward the left and more progressive, more liberal, because they mention things like... Not just coal, they mention clean energy, moving forward as a planet, taking care of our atmosphere, you know, moving forward as a culture. Like Obama would have mentioned Me Too. Obama would have mentioned.
Of course,
because the left tends to be a little more idealistic in the way they approach things. They tend to have bigger ideas, I think, which some people criticize them for. Like Bernie has all these space ideas that he can't get done. And that's an understandable critique.
Right.
But... You know, Trump and the Republicans and the conservatives, they're going to stick to grounded things. They're going to stick to the economy's doing well. We're keeping the darkies out. They're not going to say it like that. But, you know, they're going to stick to those things.
Right.
But I want ideology. I want someone to come in and say, you know what? I mean, Trump mentioned the battle on U.S. energy.
Oh,
what
yeah.
battle on U.S.
Yeah, the
energy?
War on energy.
Yeah, the war
and
on energy.
And everybody's like, what?
Though, you think the coal industry is going to pull back themselves? Do you think they're going
to
try?
I think he's got to fill 90 minutes, to be honest with you. He hasn't accomplished anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, but
it also shows you the power of words, though.
Yeah.
When he says things like "War on American Energy,"
right?
Like,
right. And then people hear that.
That's speech writing. That's good speech writing.
So listen. So let's wrap up on some of our kind of abstract opinions.
Okay.
So, well, first of all, let me just ask you this basic question: how do you feel after 1 year? It's been a little over a year now. Trump's America.
Honestly, I'm kind of over it. I mean, over it in like the negative sense. Like, I'm just over it.
Yeah.
Because
in other words, you don't need to sit down and hear CNN and say the same thing.
I know speeches. Saying. I do speeches all the time. I know speeches. They're planned. It's a time for you to choose your words wisely and put forward the best, you know, presentation of you.
Mm-hmm.
However, Trump's been speaking/tweeting every day for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the president we know. And that's the president I'm kind of over. The divisive one who just criticizes everything. And who just, I'm just over. I mean, I feel like he is a projection of the worst parts of government and ego. Everything that I am uncomfortable with about the American government system is projected in this guy.
Yeah.
The ego, the, you know, blaming other people, the serving us first and making sure we're making the most money we can and we're the most powerful country and our military is the strongest.
Right.
So
just the egotistical after a
year,
narcissism.
After a year, honestly, it's hard for me to see anything except for his huge ego.
Okay, so then this is a good follow-up then. I didn't know that was going to be your response to that, but here's a good follow-up. Have you given up? In other words, are you just like, I'm done until 2020. Like, whatever. Like, Trump, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Or is there still some hope for you that he could somehow turn that corner?
After a lifetime of serving his own needs, I don't think Trump's going to make a leap anytime soon. Now, can Congress... can our government learn how to work around this train wreck? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
After the midterms,
will
we find more balance? Maybe. Plus, I'm not afraid because I know change happens very slowly.
Yeah.
Trump's not going to signify the end of our country.
You study U.S. history at all? Or
Minorly.
Do you feel like this is what folks felt like in the 70s with Nixon?
I'm not sure. I don't know much about Watergate.
I wonder about the distrust.
Like, we can't trust our leaders anymore. That kind of thing.
I wonder about that because I just know that prior to Trump, he would probably have been considered the most divisive president.
And what year was
in history?
Watergate?
He was 60. He was in office 68 to 73.
So this is also coming at a time with the war in Vietnam.
He was.
So it's coming. It's interesting that divisive presidents come at a time in divisive history. So you can't really. I mean, even with Trump now, you can't blame.
And
him
one of
fully
the things
for the divide. The divide's been there.
And one of the things historians will say is that one of the things that broke Nixon that just, you know, killed him metaphorically was that the war ended in Vietnam under him. And when he announced that, nobody gave him credit for it. You know, they didn't give him praise for ending the war.
Interesting.
And that was one of the things that they say really broke his soul. And then I think he resigned that same year. Of course, it was over Watergate.
Yeah.
But he just didn't have, kind of like what we're saying, he just didn't have the need to fight anymore. Like, he didn't have the drive, the desire to do it anymore.
So that's a good question. Was over. That's a good question. You think?
And he was in politics his whole life.
Do you think Trump will give up?
Now, the difference
is. You think he'll just kind of eventually be like, you know?
Well, I think he kind of already has. I mean, to be honest with you. But, you know, the two differences, stark differences.
Doesn't difference. Like he enjoys speaking very much, does he? Doesn't like he enjoy this. Like, I don't think like he enjoys being up there.
The two stark differences or difference between Nixon and Trump is that Nixon was a lifelong politician. You know, Trump's only been a politician really for a year. I mean, honestly, since he got elected.
So what do you think? What's your opinion? Because you've asked me, what do you think? Are you giving up? What's this last year done?
I mean, kind of metaphorically, I kind of have.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel bad because I kind of like what you said about standing up and during the speech, for example. I feel like if he did something or if he got something passed or, you know, let's just say I got my taxes back this year and it was better. I mean, I don't know. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I would want to give him credit as the president and as the leader of the
government.
Of course. But truth be told, I wouldn't. Just because of everything he said on Twitter, everything, with all the sexual misconduct stuff. He's just not a good guy, dude. I mean, I just don't see him as a good person. I don't know him personally, but I just don't see him as a good person.
You know what?
That's probably
the most profound opinion of him that I've ever heard. Like, honestly, word for word, he's just not a good guy, dude.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's it. That's how I feel.
That's
not
my
a good
perception
guy,
of him, you know?
He's just not a good guy.
Like,
doesn't seem like a good man, you know? And of course, that's just judgment. I don't know what he's been through. I think now, Jay-Z had a wonderful interview recently.
Back and forth, yeah.
Jay-Z actually said, you know what? This guy's probably been hurt. Yeah. He's lashing out. That's right. I mean, I don't think Trump's evil. I just think, man, his...
This whole thing can be taken back to my childhood and memories of that, because I was a young guy when Reagan was in office, but I liked Reagan. You know, my parents were Democrat, and they didn't vote for him, and they weren't, quote, fans of his, but I was never, like, watching him give State of the Union. Is going, this guy's a schmuck.
What about W? You know, George W. Bush
W was okay.
He got a lot of flack for being an idiot, for not being able to be a public speaker.
He was a bad president.
Especially after Clinton.
He was a bad president, in my opinion.
He was a politician.
But I didn't think he was a bad guy.
That's an interesting point.
We're going to have different views, dude.
That's a very
But do you have to be a prick that's molesting people on buses and, you know, talking derogatorily about minorities?
Sleazy.
And
it seems sleazy.
He just doesn't seem like a good guy.
Yeah.
And I think...
Which makes it hard to trust, like, when he does do something good.
Exactly.
That's your point.
And that's
so
my point.
So if everyone's like, you know what? This guy's... He just did this and it's wonderful. It's going to be great for our country.
Great.
Guess what? The troops are coming home. The war is over. We did it. Then you still be like, well, I mean...
Yeah. Great. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. So that's what's our State of the Union?
Our?
Not our union. What America?
Okay.
Well, we already talked about that. But
now,
America.
Like I said, change happens very slowly over time. Our economy is doing very well. You know, I don't think our country is going to collapse anytime soon. I mean, it'll collapse eventually.
I mean, the only thing
happens slowly. The way our government is structured, one man can't actually do that much damage or even that much good because of the way the system is set up, which is a beautiful thing.
Right.
I'm not afraid, but I'm like, it's weird. I'm ready for a change.
Yeah.
I'm kind of over the tweeting. I'm over that the self-destructive.
I hope it doesn't go on.
Yeah, I'm done with that.
After 2020, bro.
Yeah.
I mean,
who knows? You know what? Maybe even Trump's ego can hear what people are saying about the State of the Union. Like, oh, you know, he was very sober. He was very, you know, he just kind of said what he had to say. And maybe he'll be like, you know what? I need to back up and stop doing this stuff. Maybe he won't. Who knows?
Well, the only thing I put on here,
I'm not afraid.
The only thing I put on here is that the midterms are huge. We've been saying that. We've been saying that since we started
Everyone's
the show.
Been saying that. Yeah.
And they're coming up in November of this year. So let's do what we can. Let's get out there and vote. All right, let's take another quick promo break so we can come back and wrap up, Andy. We're going to run a promo for our dear friend Emily over at The Story Behind.
I love that one.
Love that podcast. Yeah. And I decided to run her promo because she's back. She's been on hiatus for, I think, a couple months.
Really?
And
she's back. Back again.
She just came back. She did The Story Behind The Pink Slip.
What? No way.
Because
that's
slip.
Iconic.
Yeah.
I got a pink slip.
The pink slip you get at work when you lose your job.
You know, if I owned a company, I'd have like slips that have like your bonuses on them, but I'd make them in pink. So I can go on the office and have the pink slip.
This? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it had like, you know, your bonus this year is $10,000. Yeah.
And she actually guest starred with me, buddy. She did a couple of those 80s shows. She did 80s soundtracks and 80s love ballads, which will be out later this month.
Yeah.
So listen.
I want to hear the story behind 80s nostalgia. Why
she's actually doing 80s. She's doing an 80s like series. So she's going to do different things from the 80s.
I called it out, brother.
So get ready for that. All right, so here's her promo and then we will come back and wrap up.
Hi, this is Emily Prokop from The Story Behind, which is a podcast about the extraordinary history behind the ordinary. What does that mean? It means whenever my ADHD gets the best of me, I begin to wonder the stories behind everyday objects. This is the story behind sporks,
behind chewing gum,
behind hoodies, places. This is the story behind Mount Rushmore. This is the story behind speakeasies, or people. This is the story behind Uncle Sam. This is the story behind Betty White. Everything has a backstory, and from what I've noticed from doing the show, not everything is as plain and simple as history books may have you believe. Join me Mondays and Thursdays on your favorite podcast app or at thestorybehindpodcast.com. And thanks for listening.
Welcome back, guys. Episode 59, I think, of Two Peas on a Podcast.
You're correct, because we're almost 60. You're 67, and we, as a podcast, are almost 60.
Oh, right. Yes, accurate. What do you want to do? You want to do some pop culture stuff? Oh,
sure.
You know what I want to do? You know what I want to do for all our listeners?
Yes.
So the Super Bowl is this Sunday.
Super Bowl Sunday. Are you excited?
Are you having me over? What are we doing?
Your guys aren't playing.
What are we doing?
Eagles, Patriots. Do the Eagles have a chance?
Eagles, Pats. Well, actually, what I want to talk about is I want to talk about our predictions.
Oh, we have predictions.
I want to give everyone our predictions.
What did we do?
So
were we accurate last year? Are we one for
we,
one?
What did
we, I picked the Patriots last year. I'm sure I did.
Yeah, we both did. I don't know if we did the score, though. Yeah. But so let's. All right. So this year, you got Eagles, Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
What's your winner and the final score? What's your prediction?
The Eagles are, of course, a great team.
Yeah,
they're super. I love the Philadelphia Eagles. I have some friends from Philadelphia. I think it's a beautiful town. I think it'd be wonderful for that city to have that win. Mm-hmm. I think it would be beautiful for this the city of brotherly love, right? That's Philadelphia,
yeah,
right?
Of course, yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Nah, no shot in hell. My thing is, dude, well, look, this, it would be an upset.
Brady, is this Brady's last year? Is this Brady's
if
last
he
year?
Wins, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, this is Tom Brady.
I mean, I'm going to tell you right
New
now.
New England Patriots.
I'm going to tell you right now. I
think going get, full steam.
I think he can play for another 5 years, brother.
Yeah, I mean, this
I mean, I'm serious.
Like, at this point, I don't think you can derail that team.
Never.
I think they learn too much. They're too patient.
I mean, Bill Belichick is just an all-time great.
The
dude.
Giants, those 2 years were just magical, kind of, you know.
I mean, look. It's a Super Bowl. Anything can happen. So the Eagles could win. They could, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, the Falcons were up 28-3, and yeah. who would have thought the Patriots would have came back in 1.5 quarters to win that game, but they did. So anything can happen. Like I told you last week, I wouldn't fall out of my chair if the Eagles won.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that it would be an upset.
My prediction is I will be moved to tears by Justin Timberlake.
That's your prediction. So
I will lick the television screen.
That's a very good prediction.
When my man Justin comes
on. We'll see over-under on that. So I'm going to take the Pats, and I think it's going to be a good game, but I'm going to take the Patriots winning 28-20.
I'm taking the Patriots winning 38-24.
Okay. A little bit more scoring in your game.
A little more scoring.
Okay. I just don't know if Nick Foles got to shake those butterflies. he's a backup quarterback. He's
no, he's a backup quarterback, but he's a veteran.
He's a veteran.
He's been around.
He knows what he's doing. He's been around. All right, so we're talking about football. The XFL. Did you ever watch this back in the...
No.
It was back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
How long did it last? It didn't last very
like
long.
Like 2 years.
Yeah, okay.
2 years. And it ended in like 2001, I think, or
the
2000.
The WWF of football.
Yeah, the WWE. Vince McMahon, the XFL, is coming back in 2020.
Oh, my God.
Here's his quote. Quote, the new XFL is an exciting opportunity to reimagine America's favorite sport. As we move towards kickoff, see what he did there? We look forward to listening and implementing innovative ideas from players, coaches, medical experts, the media, and most importantly, football fans, unquote. The XFL. Did you ever watch it, you said?
No.
I didn't. I don't know. I feel like it was pre-social media.
Yeah.
So I feel like when it comes back in a couple of years, I might actually follow it a little bit online.
Yeah.
Like on ESPN and stuff. But back then, you couldn't really do that. Yeah. You had to like watch the games. And I don't know. It's not the NFL.
Here's the thing.
It's not the NFL.
It seems too gimmicky to me. I mean, he's he's going to make something big and bold. Like he said, he's going to give the fans exactly what they want. But you know what? That's not necessarily the best thing for a sport.
Right.
You don't just give the fans what they want. Sports, like the government, sports grow slowly over time
right.
and become an institution
yeah.
as they grow. You can't just say, I'm going to make a new sport. It's going to be popular. I'm going to give them what they want. You know, you can't. I mean,
right, right.
Like, I think it's going to be big and bright and beautiful and gimmicky. But
Trump
I mean,
will love it.
Yes.
Like, Trump will be yeah. a fan. He'll have a jersey.
Exactly. So I don't.
All right. So, dude, my son is... which I love, by the way, but he is hooked on Mario Brothers right now.
Oh, is he?
So we do on weekends. On weekends, non-school nights, we'll do Mario Kart.
Mario Kart's my jam.
We'll do Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, which one?
We got the Wii U.
Oh yeah.
And we have Mario World, 3D World, which I love that one. That's the one where you collect green stars and you open up new worlds. And we're always trying to find green stars. All
is that on the U as well?
You know,
the
Wii U? I'll tell you the story. Yeah. We had the you've seen our menu that's on our fridge.
Yes.
My family's menu.
Yes.
So just for the listeners, because we're audio, obviously, but we have a calendar on our fridge, and every night we'll write what we're planning on making for dinner.
Oh, wonderful. It's a good idea. It's very Betty Crocker.
And my wife was like, we need to figure out dinners. And my son said, I want green stars. So she wrote green stars on like Friday nights.
I want green stars. Oh, that's wonderful.
It was good.
Mario, I mean.
And we didn't eat that.
Is Mario the most iconic video game in history? The Ooh. Character and the franchise, the Mario franchise.
Dude, you're blowing my mind right now. A home video game?
Yes.
Home
video game.
Or do you mean now, like arcade game?
I'm talking both. Well, no, I'd say Mario's just home. Mario's just home.
Home then you have like video.
You have things like Zelda, Madden, all these great iconic games. But Mario, is Mario the greatest game franchise of all time?
I got to say so for home consoles.
Yeah.
I would say the Mario franchise.
Because not only are they still making games, they're still good.
Yeah. I think everybody wants to play them.
Yeah.
I mean, the Switch is $500. Everybody's dying to get it. Yeah. I can't because I'm poor. Can I borrow $500? But yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Now arcade game. You get into a whole new element. Because there's games you can only play in the arcade, like Galaga and Space Invaders.
You're so old.
I mean, you can play.
Our listeners have no idea what you're talking about.
I mean, you
about.
Can play Donkey Kong on.
Do people go to arcades anymore? That's the question.
We just did last weekend,
what?
Actually. Yeah, there's one in downtown Raleigh called...
Right, our arcades do have a...
Boxcar in downtown Raleigh. It was great. It was like a bar and an arcade.
Like a Dave and Buster's kind of thing?
Yeah, but it was all like vintage arcade games and pinball machines and that kind of thing.
Bunch of old guys like you.
Well, I didn't tell anybody yet. The reason I brought it up is
because... I got next
to
that pinball machine.
There's two Super Mario-related news stories from this week.
Two?
So first of all, Mario Kart is finally coming to smartphones. You will be able to play the racing game. It's going to be called Mario Kart Tour. Nintendo made the announcement via Twitter. It will be available in updates on both the Apple devices and the... What the hell is the Windows, the Samsung shit?
Galaxy?
Yeah, but what's their operating system? I don't know. I hate them, so I don't know what it is.
I have no idea.
Android.
And iOS, okay.
You're supposed to help me with that.
I have no idea.
You said
I'm not tech savvy.
So it'll be available on...
I have an iPhone 4.
It'll be available on Android and Apple devices in the upcoming weeks. And
that's pretty exciting. You going to get it?
Oh, yeah.
You going to copy?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to hit that up for sure. Anytime I get an opportunity to play something Mario, I'm going to play it.
Hey, check it out. I'm taking you back. In 1980, maybe five,
wow,
six.
Wow, I thought you fucking dozed off halfway through that.
Mid-80s.
Right.
I had a Super Mario Brothers watch.
Ooh, you should have kept that. That'd be worth something.
It was just black and white.
Yeah.
So just like an old Nokia phone screen, kind of like that.
Yeah.
But you could play Mario on
the
watch.
No, you should have kept
watch.
That. That'd be worth something.
It was hot.
I don't remember that, but that sounds like that'd be worth something. All right. And the other thing is Nintendo and Illumination Universal.
Illumination!
Have
the
announced
minions.
The Minions and Despicable Me. Yeah. They have announced they're developing a new Super Mario Brothers animated movie.
Oh, how do you feel about
to
that?
To be released. I'm fucking excited.
You ready?
I'm excited that it's going to be animated. Did you see that fucking train wreck with the real life guys?
Yeah.
Whoa, brother. that was a fucking
They tried.
Shit show.
They did the best they could.
But anyway, it's going to be released in theaters. It's expected to be in 2020. They have not given the release date yet. The creator of Super Mario Brothers, the guy that invented it, is going to be producing the film.
See, that's important.
That's a big deal.
That's important. You got to honor. You got to honor the franchise.
And it will be animated. So I'm super excited about that. My son will be 6 or 7 years old when it comes
he'll
out.
He'll be ready.
So that'll be great.
That's prime theater age. We're going to the theater. It's magical. Get some popcorn.
All right. I only got a couple more here, brother. Two more to be exact, and then I'll throw you for a loop.
Oh, loopy.
Did you see that a emotional support peacock was denied entry onto a flight?
Dude, you can't take a peacock on a flight.
You can't take a peacock. We'll stick to the animal. You can't take the animal, the peacock on the flight. That's absolutely accurate.
I mean,
You're okay with it?
Apparently, the airline actually contacted
them. Yeah, that's what I was going to tell you.
You better get that peacock off. I mean, it's a peacock.
I'm going to tell you a couple facts here.
It's a peacock.
So, United Airlines turned away an emotional support animal, a peacock, at a New Jersey airport this weekend.
Peacocks are big.
They said in a statement that it did not meet guidelines for a number of reasons, including its weight and size.
Exactly. Peacocks are big.
The incident,
their tails alone are like 2 feet, 3 feet long.
The incident took place in the lobby of the Newark Liberty International Airport on Saturday. We explained this to the customer on 3 separate occasions before they even arrived at the airport.
So they told him, dude.
Says United Airlines.
You can't bring the peacock on the plane.
How do you feel about emotional support animals? Is that a thing? I mean, do you feel okay? I mean, is that...
Now, there are some...
I guess that's a thing, but I don't want to be insensitive.
I mean, of course there are some animals, like, I mean...
The seeing eye dogs and stuff, service animals. Yeah.
Now, animals do provide a certain level of emotional support. And if it's convenient to take them out into culture and into society, I think you should obviously bring them. I mean, cats, dogs, but...
Ready?
There's also...
I got a segue for you.
There's also institutions like airlines and restaurants. They also have to provide comfort for their...
guidelines.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just bring...
Yeah, exactly. Anything. But I got one for you. Ready?
But, I mean, I do understand. I mean, animals bring a lot of emotional support. They do.
And here's
the
segue.
You have your cats.
Here's the segue. Dream job alert, brother. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Hold on. So, first of all, let's move to Ireland. We have to do that first of all. A veterinary clinic in Ireland is seeking professional cat cuddlers.
I'm gone. I'll be okay. Bye, guys. Thank you for hiring.
Okay. The clinic said the ideal candidate will have gentle hands.
Gerald,
They could pet cats for long periods of
Gerald,
time.
Gerald, 2.
They speak softly.
Gerald, 3.
And they can understand different types of purring.
Gerald, 4.
It's the Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Ireland.
Can you understand?
They posted the job on their
purring?
Website.
Can you understand?
I speak cat, brother.
Yeah,
I speak cat.
Oh, that's a hungry purr. Oh, that's an excited purr.
I don't want to tell you what my psycho cat Louis says and his thoughts and his purrs.
Okay,
it's very dark.
His purrs are
He's
far
a dark
from
guy,
her.
Brother. He's a dark guy.
Okay.
Charlie's pretty chill though.
Okay.
All right, you ready for your loop?
Would you do that?
Oh, fuck! What are you kidding me?
Pet cats
that
all day?
Pay me like below minimum wage, and I'd be like, I'm doing it. I'm leaving you, honey. I'm going to Ireland. I'm cuddling cats for the rest of my life. Make it $3 an hour or whatever. That'd be great though, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm more of a cat guy than you, I think.
Yeah.
But I just love cats, like, you know, sitting on my face. My wife does too.
I love cats. I love them. I don't know if I want to pet them all day for a job. I need a little more meaning and purpose in my life.
Nah, but that's plenty of that is plenty of meaning and purpose.
Okay.
All right, you ready for your loop? So I'm going to go back to, we talked about Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers.
Okay, wonderful.
So it made me think of this.
Okay.
This is your loop.
Oh, good.
Who would play us in a movie about the two-piece?
Okay. Who would play me?
You don't even have to tell me who's who. Just the two actors.
The guy in Sideways. He's been a lot of things. He's been all over the place.
You're not talking about Thomas Hayden Church, though.
I'm talking about the other guy. The lead
Paul
guy.
Giamatti?
Paul Giamatti would play you.
Paul, thanks.
And Jim Carrey would play me.
So Paul Giamatti and Jim Carrey. I feel like yours is more accurate.
Paul Giamatti is funny and he's fun, but he's really ugly. Like
he's fat and bald and ugly.
Jim Carrey has gone through the same process I have. He went from humor to kind of existentialism into like spirituality.
Now, you guys do talk alike.
Yeah. Now,
lately. No, I mean,
Jim Carrey looks nothing like me.
No, he'd have to shave his head. Exactly. Fucking, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, mine are. I went pretty simple, and it's the first thing that popped in my head. Okay. And I thought, well, first of all, I want to see these two guys in a movie together.
Okay.
Period. Okay. And then, let alone if they were playing us, but I put Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake.
Ah!
All right.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah, the two peas, bro.
Oh, okay.
Because they're two peas in a pod.
They are two peas in a pod.
No, we're two peas on a pod.
Who would Justin do me or Jimmy do me?
Whoa. It's not going to be that kind of movie, brother. It's not going to be a gay porn, brother. Right? It's going to be like a comedy about the rise of our podcast. You know what I mean? Now, what if that happens in like 10 years and then we're actually casting actors for that? Would it be fucking crazy or what?
Paul Giamatti looks just like you, brother. We'll
see what he's doing.
I'm just saying.
He might need work. All right. Let me get your final thought here, brother. I'm going to bring in Sir Elton John again. Now it's his retirement. We only got 3 years to get our fill. Gotta get it in. Give us your final thought, episode 59, Andy.
Well, you know, change happens slowly over time, and all we can do is contribute to it. And we don't always see the ripples of the waves. We don't always see the effects of what we do. So let go of trying to see those effects and just give love, just give service, just do what you can for this world and know that the ripples from your actions are going to affect this entire reality we live in slowly over time. You are building not only your life, you are building our life together. Yes, that's funny.
Andy, I want to thank you for being here yet again, brother. We will be back next week, guys, for episode number 60. And also be on the lookout for a new bonus episode at least once a month. We got the top 5 1980s soundtracks that came up in January. And this month we'll be doing the top 5 1980s love ballads for Valentine's Day. That'll be exciting.
Under the cover!
Go to Patreon and get all the information on that. Donate to the show and you can get all that bonus material early. Andy, stay sexy, brother.
It's hard not to.
Yeah, I mean, you do it, man. Yes. Flannels and all, brother.
You are the Paul Giamatti of podcasts.
I'm the bald, fat, ugly guy of podcasts. Wow, that is high praise, brother. Yes. That is high praise. You are the, what did you give yourself? Jim Carrey. You're the Jim Carrey.
You think when Paul Giamatti gets cast,
the
they're
going
to tell Paul Giamatti, we need you to be a little fatter, a little balder, and a little uglier.
You got to really prepare for this role, brother. We need you to beef up. All right? Okay. We'll be back next week, man. All right, I'll see you then, brother.
Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to Two Peas on a Podcast. The views and opinions expressed were solely those of the hosts and are not necessarily shared by our distributors or hosting companies. Visit twopeasonapod.com for more info.
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.